Are you still in touch with many people from back then?
Not directly, no, but there's a lot of them still in Cardiff who you bump into now and again. And there was one lady who kind of, there's a giant space in Prophecy whereby the backstage area was pretty big. And there was a brick wall with a doorway in it which led into the performance space. And this community member, I can't remember her name, was just the woman who was at the doorway, basically getting people organised to come through the doorway and get into the show. And she was a genius. She was just brilliant. And she was having a whale of a time doing that. She was popular, she was funny, and then she just had to run around and say, like, you know, okay, you guys are the swords, can you get through here now because we need you? Nobody kind of designed it that job should be there. It just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that she became the kind of linchpin of the whole thing. That's great. Yeah. It's so good. And I also remember that the show finished with some pyrotechnics and gerbs. And Rhiannon, we both found that the air was unbreathable when we set these things off. It was right at the very, very end. And we both had to run out of the space to get some oxygen in. Because we were just choking and coughing. We couldn't say anything over the headset system. The show was finished, but we just couldn't stand it. It was just too much to use indoors. We were just particularly sensitive to it ourselves. But I went back to the second show after that, knowing that it was going to be crazy. But I reckon I wasn't available for the third show.
Okay.
Which Immortal toured, and then went to lots of places, and it took place over quite a long period of time. And maybe it was a bit more of a circus show than the ethic of it was a bit more circus than this was, which was a community event that could only take place for a limited time in one space.
So having worked with No Fit State back then in the 90s, of that, could you have predicted they'd be what they are today? Did you?
No.
No.
No. I think because the ethic of what they are, which is a blend of community, actually a rather good circus, and a show that kind of embraces both of those things at all times, is not something that at the time I associated with an institution. Most organisations of that size and energy don't usually have the cohesion to last for as long as No Fit have. And their genius is to demonstrate that ethic in the first place, but also to justify it and claim that it is deserving of funding. And of course it is. When you're in the middle of the big shows like that, you just think, this is wonderful, this is extraordinary, this is brilliant. When you have a product like that that is of such social value as well as for entertainment value and is a flagship for the arts in Cardiff in many ways to different communities and different audiences, you've got to protect it, you've got to foster it, and you've got to continually make a case for it. A lot of companies have failed in that way. And throughout my whole career in the arts, you know, I was kind of working for a company that had a great time when it got formed. It's sustaining its funding, its workload. But there's just a little smell of decline in almost every arts organisation in Britain. That smell's not there with No Fit. There's always a possibility there that things can grow, that the ambition will fuel them to greater achievement, and that they will establish themselves in their own way with their own ideals more and more firmly. And that's rare in my experience, rare in the UK, much more common abroad, I have to say.
Right.
But the idea that you're in a company that is going places, that is building and is doing more. I work for a lot of companies. And
do you have any thoughts on how No Fit State have managed to do that then? Or, you know, what's...
I think we've just been brutally honest with one another.
Right.
It's all down to how you converse, how you describe, and how you refine what it is that you're doing. There's a remarkable degree of consistency between the people who run that organisation about how they consider the organisation, how they... I hate the word brand, but it is a brand. is there's a certain thing you expect from no-fit state. Even its unpredictability is part of the mix. Mm-hmm. And they all know that. They all are remarkably true to it. It's not an easy process, I'm sure, sometimes. But there's a great acceptance of the fact that, that this company has its own identity, momentum and mission. Mm-hmm. That is important and vital. And it benefits so many people in so many different ways. And also has, you know, a more established community function now. So in its the Four Elms premises, it's just brilliant. And you know, that's a way to judge an organisation by looking at its premises. It seems to be a bit of an empire now. They have John Street, they have the stores in Dumbles Road, they have the Four Elms, and you know, they use those spaces well. They need those spaces. The premises have to expand to encompass their ambition, and the stores in Dumbles Road are particularly pleased about them, because when I was working for them later as a production manager, I was tearing my hair out saying that if this company knew what it possessed, things would be an awful lot easier. And, you know, a couple of years later, they've got their own stores now with people to actually police and manage those stores. And you think, good, excellent. So it's becoming, while staying true to its mission, it's becoming more professional and more organised and more aware of how to sustain its success. And that success is building. Mm-hmm. As Bianco, it's a huge achievement. The number of people I encounter, not just in Cardiff, who know about that show and have seen it and have heard about it or are keen to know about it. It's amazing. It's very, very good. And of course, it's a good night out.
Yes.
And I've kind of graduated from being a production manager on the show to just being an audience member. And I love it, you know. I think it's a great thing to go back and see, especially when it changes with the people involved. It evolves itself, it moves on. So, and you imagine it's one of those shows that maybe can sustain an existence for a long time. I've been to see Stomp, which is a show that started as a fringe show and has now got maybe four or five different productions touring at any one time, or at one point there were a good number of productions of Stomp still touring the world, and it's a great popular audience success and a really good idea. And I think Bianco is certainly right up there with the fact that it's a show that will always reach out for new audiences worldwide, but also will attract people who will go back to see it again because the experience is indescribably wonderful at times. It's such a strong experience.
Okay. So we talked about you've been involved in the community shows. Can you tell me what involvement you've had with No Fit State since then?
I got a phone call asking me if I'd go and get involved in Mundo Paralelo, which was the show which was a co-production between No Fit State and the National Theatre of Wales, directed by Mladen Slavic, who's a director based in France. It was a reasonable success as a show with the National Theatre of Wales, but then the idea was to build the show and to tour it, to take it into non-tented spaces. We normally say non-theatre spaces, but actually in this case it was non-tented spaces because it was going into theatres. And this is a language I speak a little more comfortably than the no-fit people do, who remain surprisingly true to all the circus ethics, wonderful as they are, about cooperation and mucking in to do everything involved with the company. But I had to kind of interface that wonderful ethic with people who really need to know certain facts and calculations. And so I was asked to come in and help with that. And so I got to know the company again after a period of maybe, I don't know, 15 years or so. And that is maybe my role now, is to come in and work with them when they've got to work in a building with a crew. That's the briar patch from which I was born, so I'm quite good at that. Mm-hmm. And as such, you know, once I've made those plans, when it actually comes to the fit up of the show in the theatre, I seem to be quite redundant. I don't really seem to think I'm doing anything here. And I keep on going to saying, is it worth having me here now? And they all go, oh, yes, yes, it is. Yes, believe me. Oh, yes, it is. So I don't really know what I do for them anymore. I just kind of go along and ask occasionally questions that people eventually have to give answers to. And maybe that's a decent function for me to fulfill. Maybe that justifies a wage. I end up doing a lot of drawings for them. The drawings for the installation of Bianco in the Roundhouse were about the most complicated I've ever had to do, because it's an old building. You do the rigging from beams that run circularly around the roof there. And the calculations for that, of course, have always got to be tip-top, because safety is crucial for circus aerial skills. But we're dealing with an organisation there that really needed to have the facts to relay to the Camden Council, who are very stringent about theatre performances. Some people believe that the Camden Council want to close down all the theatres in Camden, which goes down as far as the Drill Hall, south of Euston Road. So they actually do cover quite a lot of theatres there, but they are about the strictest authorities I've come across in London. So we had to be quite precise about our dealings there. But of course, when we came to the Roundhouse, I'd worked there years ago before it closed for refurbishment. And it was palatial. It was, you know, a brand new conversion by the time we got in there, and it was weatherproof, which it never used to be. And facilities were very, very good, and the crew were very helpful. And of course, they moved into the car park. They built all their caravans in the car park. They took over the whole place. So they were kind of on campus in Kentish Town for the duration of it all, which made for rather good atmosphere, you know. Mm-hmm. We ate in the car park, you know, we were catered for there. And it was a great buzz having a London audience pile in to see that show, some of whom already knew the company very well and had a great idea of what it was they were coming to see, and then being more impressed as they were walking out. It was a great time and a very successful show.
Okay. All right. Have you got anything else that you feel like you need to get recorded? Memories or stories or thoughts on any of the people you've worked with?
Yeah, I mean, I think I received a phone call asking me to fulfil the duties of production manager for the company, and it's not the thing I normally do. I've worked with production managers for like 30 years, so I kind of know what they do, and my job is a little more artistic normally, so therefore I tend not to home in on the more technical and administrative side of production. But I thought, well, the big plus for me is that I know the company, I know how they work, I know how criminally insane they can be. So if I don't say yes, it's going to be someone else and they're going to get a huge shock. So I better just go along and do this one. And I had a great time. I loved it. It was great. And we toured that show into some very difficult spaces, including Theatre Mildan, which famously had a wheelchair lift at one side of the stage, which everybody hated, and had been installed in the existence of the authorities. But then the regulations changed, meaning that you couldn't actually lower people in wheelchairs into the lower part of the auditorium. So therefore, this thing had to sit at the side of the stage. And when we installed the show there, we had to build the show right out into the auditorium, because they had accepted the booking before they quite realised how difficult it was going to be to fit the stage into this space. So we actually went into something like row 3 of the stalls with the set. And then the production manager at the Theatre Mildan realised there was enough people in the building to get rid of this thing. And we gleefully helped them, you know, unbolt this wheelchair lift and physically lift it. There was enough of us to actually lift it out of the building and put it, you know, at the back of their stores. And you know, we have become heroes of the Welsh touring circuit because of this, because we were the people who got rid of that wheelchair lift, which was an incredibly stupid idea from the outset, and then couldn't even fulfil the function it was there to do, and had to just sit, you know, the side of the stage that you had to build and work on.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, which show was this?
This was for Mundo Parallel,
okay,
where we had to install quite a large amount of truss into this theatre. And we began to think we should never really have booked this theatre because the show was just maybe a little too big for it. Nonsense, we were assured. It was going to be possible. And, well, we made it work.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe had to reduce the audience capacity a bit more than we might have had to, but we certainly got the show on. And there was a kind of warm, fuzzy glow of success surrounded the crew when we managed mm-hmm. to do that. So there were some challenges on the tour, but we always took on some big challenges there. And we took the show abroad as well and performed it in France. And that was also very exciting, working with French technicians who are very professional. There's less turnover of staff in a French theatre. So you're dealing with people who are there for life, who know each other incredibly well. And, you know, there's a language barrier. Fortunately, I do speak a bit of French. And I learned in the end that you could challenge them to do incredible things. We had to have a cloth that had to fly directly in, but then we couldn't get it far downstage enough. And so I just went to the crew and said, explained the problem to them, and they just looked at one another and started speaking in incomprehensible French, turned around and said, "We're going to do this for you." And they opened up some holes already in the floor and put diagonal ropes up to the grid so that when this bar came in, it kind of pushed itself down the stage. And I've never seen that done before. And it was a very creative solution to a problem. But we managed to just say, be honest, here's our problem. We don't know how to solve this. And mm-hmm. they scurried about trying to figure out how to do this and came up with a brilliant idea. So we're very grateful to them. But in a way, you can learn to use a crew in a foreign theatre. If they're on site, they like a challenge like mm-hmm. that. In this country, maybe they say, "Oh, no, that's a complicated thing. There's not enough people to do. There's not the right amount of equipment." French theatres have got huge amounts of equipment. As soon as I saw the plan, I knew exactly what the crew would be like, exactly how much kit they would have, exactly where the problems wouldn't be. It was just obvious that it was one of those provincial French theatres that had everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it went very well.